Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show, and you can find us at pitchvision.com and contact us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sampath from Australia. Coming up on the show, we answer some more of your questions, and we have a chat with Ian Pond regarding your fast bowling questions. Well, David, I was going to the Pitch Vision site, and don't know if you remember, since you've made so many articles, but do you remember your guide to off-season training?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
You put up. Yeah. Well, I was having a look through that to see if I've missed anything, because I have the worst memory anyway, and I found out that I missed a really critical thing in my off-season training, and that was going to the gym. And something struck me there when I was reading, and it said that all strength and sort of building up of strength should be done during the off-season, and during the season is where your technique, you try to perfect your technique. And then I was thinking, hang on, I've sort of missed my whole off-season just trying to perfect my technique when I've not really built up any strength. So I've been going to the gym, and I've sort of written myself up a program to sort of strengthen my whole body, especially fast bowling related, thanks to your off-season training guide. Is there anything else you see as being critical to off-season training and strengthening? Apart from the gym, do you see a frequent net session as a necessity?
I wouldn't have said so. I mean, it's good to keep your hand in the off-season. And it depends when in the off-season as well you're talking about. I mean, the absolute depths of the off-season, then there's probably no need to do it. But as you get nearer the pre-season, yeah, you probably do want to do some skill work as well on top. You sort of gradually do less strength and power development and gradually do more skill development as you get nearer to the start of the season. So what kind of program have you set up?
Well, it's mainly a fast bowler strengthening program. I got a bit of help from Ian Pond's fast bowling Bible guide and from Bob Woomer's book as well.
Yeah.
Although I know you're not a fan of some of those exercises in Bob Woomer's book, but yeah, I've been doing a lot of dumbbell presses for my arms and a lot of core strengthening exercises.
Okay.
And for my lower body, I've been doing squats and deadlifts for my back, sort of. Yeah, so it's sort of strengthening my whole body and especially my core, because that's my weakness at the moment. So if I get that strengthened and get that peaked enough, I think I should be able to bowl quick enough and accurately enough as well without being tired or ever throughout my spell.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Sounds like you're going along the right track there. Are you doing any kind of mobility stuff, you know, in your warm-up? Are you sort of getting the active mobility work in and all that kind of thing, stretchy?
Yeah, that's right. I try not to. Well, I never forget that, because I tend to get really sore in my body if I don't stretch for at least 15 to 20 minutes at least. So in my stretches, yeah, I do have exercises to sort of really loosen myself up. And I sort of have a short cool down stretch as well, just so that my body doesn't tense up afterwards.
That's a good idea.
So how's your week been? Any rain there, or you still got sunshine?
Yeah, unfortunately, the heat wave has ended, and we're back to sort of normal weather here, which is rain. Unfortunately. So we were rained off on the weekend, so we didn't get a chance to play at all. I didn't even get to the ground. You know, the weather was so bad that it was called off fairly soon in the morning. So that was that, and we didn't get a game. So I'm not sure where that puts us in the league standings, but hopefully the whole area was just as bad, so we didn't fall behind all the people that were chasing us in the league table.
Yeah.
But it did give me a chance to work out, just like you, just to sort of have a little fiddle around with my training and make some changes and sort of review where I am in the season and see how it's all going. And I'm quite pleased with it at the moment. I think that I've been keeping on track with exactly where I wanted to be. So I'm really enjoying playing at the moment, and you know, having a sort of your goals written down and knowing what you're aiming for is really important, and I've been looking at those and making sure that they're on track. The only thing that really hasn't been on track for me is the number of dismissals that I've had this season, which unfortunately, I haven't really had any chances for some reason or another. So I was thinking about that just to see if, maybe I could have done something different. Maybe I should have tried standing up to the medium paces more quickly than I have been. But I don't think so. I think it's just been one of those seasons where we haven't had any chances edged behind. As you know, as that I suppose that happens. And I've changed my training program. I've cut it down a bit in terms of the amount of sessions I'm doing. Purely because it's, we're getting into the second half of the season now, and it's quite hard to, to do a lot of training and a lot of playing. So I'm cutting that down to twice a week. I'm focusing more on sort of a very sort of short burst intense training, and then plenty of sort of recovery as well. So plenty of foam rolling and, like you, stretching and mobilizing my joints and making sure that everything's working properly as we head towards the end of the season. Well, we're halfway through, so it's not the end yet, but we're in the back nine, as they say in golf. So yeah, we're starting to look towards the end there, and focus on getting the power and the speed still going right up to the end of the season. So it's definitely not it definitely wasn't a wasted weekend.
I'm curious, David, at the halfway mark of your season, which is sort of now, if you're sort of meeting your goals and you're on track to meeting your goals for the season, do you sort of revise your goals and targets and sort of increase them? So say if you wanted to get 200 runs in a season, but you're already on about 120 or 150, do you sort of revise them and increase your targets just to sort of give yourself extra motivation?
It does depend on the target. I mean, in the case of, yeah, if you've set yourself a target for runs and you're easily going to get it, or it looks like you're easily going to get it, then yeah, you can try and you can increase it slightly. You have to be constantly thinking to yourself, is this goal that I've set myself, is it challenging to me, but is it realistic as well? You don't want it to be too easy, you don't want it to be too hard. So yeah, you might have to review it halfway through the season. But a lot of my goals are not based on performance, because those type of goals you haven't got full control over. We've talked about this before, haven't you? You've got to be wary of setting yourself a target of, say, 500 runs for the season, for example, because you might get a run of, like with my catches, I've set myself a target of 25 catches at the start of the season. I'm really going to have to, or dismissals, I should say. I'm really going to have to go some to get to that now, because I've only got three, and we're halfway through the season. So, it's now starting to get the point where you're thinking, well, we've got to get over two a match now to get up to 25. But anyway, so the point is, you can't always control it. But if I've got a goal where I'm saying to myself, I'm going to go to the gym 3 times a week, or I've changed that now to twice a week, I'm going to go to the gym twice a week, and that's my goal, then you wouldn't revise that. You either meet that goal or you don't. You wouldn't particularly revise that. You might change it to twice a week, or you might change it to 4 times a week, although that would be rare. But you wouldn't necessarily set yourself just performance targets, as in number of runs, number of wickets, or number of dismissals.
Ian Pond's back to answer one of your fast bowling questions now, so we got him on the line.
Welcome back to the show, Ian.
Thanks, David.
Some coaches talk about bowlers having a natural length, some fuller and some a bit further back. Is this true? And if it is, can it be adjusted depending on conditions?
Well, first thing to say, if I answer the second part of that question first, I think any decent cricketer, any decent bowler, should be able to adjust their length for the conditions they play in. And let me give you an example. If you're playing 2020 cricket, at the end of an innings, you're going to bowl very full. And maybe if you're bowling with a new cricket ball at the beginning of an innings, you're looking to probably bowl just back of a length. So, you're going to naturally be able to vary the length of the ball anyway. But with regard to bowlers having a natural length, when I played professional cricket, there is definitely a length that you settle into when you bowl to a first-class cricketer. And I do remember then at the end of my career playing a lot of club cricket, and that length that I'd settled into was completely wrong for club cricket. In fact, I went past the outside edge of the bat a lot more at club level, but the batsman never edged it because it was the wrong length for them to edge it, if you see what I mean. And I think what happens is as you grow as a cricketer, certainly from junior cricket through age group cricket into adult and then on, that you do settle into and you do learn what lengths to bowl. The other thing about bowling, of course, is the height of the bowler. Someone, for example, like a Darren Goff, who's quite short, or Graham Napier, currently playing, bowling 90 miles an hour. Very skiddy bowlers. You know, they get the ball through. They probably bowl a little bit fuller. Someone like a Steve Harmison, an obvious thing to say, or a Stuart Broad, incredibly tall bowlers, or a Martin Jenkins, would make the ball bounce from a good length, and they're incredibly hard to bat against. So the height of the bowler definitely dictates the length that you bowl. But I think what's more important, David, is the level of cricket you play relative to the person that you're bowling at. So if you've got a Will Jefferson of Notts, who's 6'11" nearly, or you had someone like Harry Pilling, who played in the 1970s for Lancashire, I think it was 4'11", you know, clearly their stride patterns as batsmen are totally different, and you would have to adjust your length according to pitch conditions, your height, their height. You know, you can't go into a match and with a book of calculations saying which length do I bowl, which length do I bowl. It's definitely a feeling. It's definitely something that you need to work at. But it's something that you do develop as a bowler, I think, naturally. But it's a really good question, actually, because at club level, I think you just need to get a little bit fuller. It's always best to slightly overpitch than underpitch. But whatever length you bowl, you should always hit the pitch really hard. And I think that's the secret.
Thanks for your time, Ian. We're already looking forward to next week's question. I think it's time we get into the listeners' questions for today, David.
Yeah.
Welcome to the question section of the My Cricket Coach Show. Our first question today, David, is from Trivedi, and he's a 14-year-old, 5 foot tall cricket player, and he says that
He plays for a school team.
And he says that he plays for a school team, and he says, I intend to become a fast bowler, but I have heavy thighs, and because of that, I'm not able to run fast, which decreases my bowling speed. I want to increase my bowling speed. Please advise. Now, David, when he says he's got heavy thighs, does that mean he's got a sort of cut down his body fat level, or does that mean his legs aren't strong enough?
Well, it's difficult to say, isn't it? Heavy thighs suggests that, you know, he's, as you say, he's a bit overweight. But it may be that, I mean, often when you say the term heavy thighs, you also mean that when you're running in, you know, you feel that heaviness in your legs that means you can't get up to the proper speed. So I'm not sure which of the two. I think, from the sounds of it, it's the first one of those two. But it could be either. So let's answer both. let's do both, because might be the best way to do it. So what he says is he wants to be a fast bowler. He can't run fast, which decreases his bowling speed. And he wants to increase his bowling speed, as many people who email in do want to increase their bowling speed. So, well, the first part of that is the assumption that the ability to run fast is related to the ability to bowl fast. I don't think it is, not directly. Otherwise, you know, someone like Usain Bolt would be able to bowl at 90 miles an hour. And he says himself that he can't. He's not a very good cricketer. He said that himself. So
yeah, he says he bowls fast. He runs faster than he bowls, doesn't he?
He runs faster than he bowls. So there you go, exactly. Yeah. So what a run-up really is, as you know, Kevin, about rhythm. It's about getting to the creases at an optimum speed. It's not about charging into the crease as fast as you can and getting up to full sprinting speed before you get there.
Yeah.
So it's probably not the fact he's got heavy thighs, whether they are overweight thighs or heavy thighs, as in he gets tired very quickly, it's probably not to do with the fact that he can't bowl fast. It's probably the fast bowling action is all to do with what happens at the crease. You can have a pretty lethargic run up. Simon Jones, for example, has a lot of body in his action. If you see what I mean, and by that I mean he doesn't have a dramatically fast run up. He runs up quite slowly, relatively speaking, for a fast bowler, and produces all the pace from the action. So you can do it with without much of a run up at all.
Yeah.
So that brings us on to the classic points about bowling fast, which we've discussed many, many times on this show. And if you go back into the show archives, you can hear Ian Pond talking about it on some old shows. I think we've done a whole interview with him about that. And also there's a section on the My Cricket Coach pages, which I'll link to in the show notes, which is a three-part series on how to bowl faster, the 10 immutable laws of fast bowling. And of course, if you want the answers straight from the horse's mouth with the drills and everything, we've got the How to Bowl Faster course on Pitch Vision Academy. So there's no point in me going over all that again, because there's so much out there already for free, and if you want to get the premium content, you can pay for the premium content as well. So let's get back to the heavy thighs, just so we can actually answer the question there. Now, the heavy thighs are, if we're talking about being overweight, then you need to lose weight. How do you lose weight? You eat less food, or eat less calories than you burn. Simple as that. Eat less calories than you burn and you'll lose weight. Now, physiologically, that's quite easy. It's just a balancing act between calories in and calories out. Psychologically, that's not so easy. So there are a lot of tricks that you can do to improve your body composition. Weight training, which will increase the strength and efficiency of your muscles, and the stronger and more efficient your muscles are, the more your metabolism goes up and the more calories you burn. So that puts a little tick in the calories out column. You can cut down the amount of carbohydrates you eat, because carbohydrates tend to be a heavy source of calories, a very dense source of calories, whereas food which is higher in protein and higher in fiber, those type of foods, it's a lot harder to overeat those foods. So fruit and vegetables, although they are sort of carbohydrate rich foods, it's very difficult to sort of get fat eating carrots and cucumbers. You have to eat quite a lot before you're going in through that. And also protein, high protein foods, you know, lean foods like chicken and fish and lean beef and things like that. They fill you up quite a lot. And you can eat quite a lot of that, or feel like you've eaten quite a lot of that, and not necessarily be overeating, i.e. eating more calories than you're burning. Increase your activity level, play a lot more cricket, do a lot more fitness work when you're not playing cricket, and that will burn calories. And if you have something which doesn't work for you, then make sure that A, the technique that you're trying is that you're actually doing it. For example, if you're trying to cut down the amount of calories that you eat by eating less carbohydrates, then make sure you are eating less carbohydrates and you are counting. You know, if you have a sneaky donut one day, you know, that counts. So that's the first thing. Make sure you are actually doing what you say you're supposed to be doing. And then if that isn't working for some reason, then, you know, try something else. But stick with it for at least 2 weeks before you make that decision.
Yeah.
You have to stick with something for at least 2 weeks with about 90% compliance before you can say whether or not it's working for you. And to be honest, there's everybody in the world, doesn't matter, well, unless you've got some kind of very, very strange condition, everybody in the world has the ability to lose weight by burning more calories than they consume. So that's the, you know, if you're overweight side of it. If he gets heavy legs, as in he can't run because he feels tired and you get that feeling where you're running through glue, then that's more of a fitness element. So if you're trying to improve your fitness, you can do lots more running. Outdoor running is better, you know, uphills, downhills, over different types of surfaces. Play lots of cricket. And if you want to go into the gym as supplementary, you know, if you're going to go on the treadmill or go on the bike or whatever, you can do all that as well. Anything that involves working your legs. And then do some strength training as well. So, you know, make sure, as you're doing, Kevin, do squats and deadlifts and single leg work. And, you know, do that two or three times a week to improve the strength of your muscles in your leg. And
that
will improve your overall fitness, which will stop you getting that heavy-legged feeling.
From a bowler to a batsman, we have a question from QWERTY, and he says, he or she says, for years I've been holding the bat with what I thought was a classical grip, that is with the V's of the hand pointing straight down the back of the bat. Recently, though, I was told to hold them slightly at an angle so that on the back lift, the bat is held tilted at a 45-degree angle, such as forming a V by pointing your thumb and forefinger down between the outside edge and the center of the back of the bat. But what this grip has done is help him hold the bat in such a way that when it comes down on striking the ball, the bat face is perfectly square for on drives, defense, and off drives. However, last weekend he had a problem in a 2020, David, and he says, I faced a wide ball that bounced higher. Normally I wouldn't have hit the ball, but in a 2020 I went for it. What I noticed was that I got a massive edge on the ball, which tipped it up in the air and backwards. I'm absolutely certain that this is because with the new grip on swinging sideways and out for a cut instead of down, the bat is angled slightly backwards instead of flat. Any thoughts? And seems like I need to relearn the cut to bring my wrists over more than before. Now, David, first of all, is there a perfect way to hold a bat?
Yes, there is a perfect way to hold the bat. However, there are lots of imperfect ways that work perfectly for different people. So the perfect way to hold the bat, first of all, let's cover that. So if you're a coach, for example, and you're coaching a young boy who, or girl who's, you know, 10 or 11 years old, they've never played a competitive cricket game. They're just learning the game for the first time. What grip do you teach? You have to teach them something, right? So what grip do you teach them? Well, the perfect grip is that, as described in the email, the top hand, the V of your finger, first finger and your thumb, should be pointing halfway between the edge of the bat and the complete back of the bat. The bottom hand grip, the V should be pointing directly down the back of the bat. That gives you the most flexibility in the position of your hands. They should also be the gloves touching and about halfway up the handle or slightly higher. Again, that's the optimum position for being able to play all shots around the ground. Now, you can, people who are listening can probably, off the top of their head, reel off a bunch of people who didn't hold the bat like that and were extremely successful. A name that springs to mind is Chris Gayle. He holds the bat very low down, for example. He's not a bad player. Don Bradman used to choke the bat with the bottom hand with his grip, whereas it should be, most people say it should be a light grip. So there's plenty of examples of people who do it differently like that. But if you're going to teach something, that is the most flexible way of doing it. So he's on the right track there by changing his grip from one where it's directly down the back of the bat to a slight angle. Because what that allows you to do is that makes the bat an extension of your forearm much more. Whereas if the grip is right down the back of the bat, it's less of an extension of your forearm. So you've got less top hand control, basically. So he's doing the right thing there. So the next question is, did that cause him to cut the ball up in the air? Well, I don't think it would have, because it might be that he's feeling slightly uncomfortable because he's adjusted the position of the bat, that he doesn't he doesn't feel comfortable cutting, and he's going to have to relearn to roll the wrists. Well, that's fine. I mean, you should be you should be adjusting the wrist to so the bat face is pointing down. If the bat face is pointing upwards, as he described it there, sort of like an up and over shot, over the slips kind of shot. Yeah, that sounds more like he's slightly mistimed. He's gone for a big heave because it's a 2020 game, and he's brought his bottom hand in a little bit too soon, and he sort of scooped it. So that's not really...
So you're saying timing was the issue there?
Yeah, it sounds like. I mean, obviously, you'd have to look, watch him doing it to see what he's doing. It could also be that he's not when he's going when he was going for the cut, he was starting with a low back lift and he was coming up. Whereas if you're going for the cut, you need a relative. If you're going to cut down on it, you need to cut down on it from a high back lift.
Yeah.
So it could be more to do with the back lift than the actual grip itself, because changing the grip wouldn't change the position of the blade of the bat in the cut shot.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's the particular problem he's having.
Yeah.
But the main thing is with grip is that he needs to be comfortable. He needs to have a grip which he feels comfortable playing shots, and it sounds like this new grip is more comfortable than the old grip, and he just needs to have a little practice with the cut shot. Especially look at the back lift.
Yeah. So what he seems to think is a problem, David, he said that he might need to reload the cut to bring his wrists more over, sort of play over the shot and use his wrist. Do you think that's a problem as well? Or do you just think it's timing for the moment?
Hard to say for sure. I can't see how the real point I'm trying to make is I can't see how the grip can have caused that.
Yeah.
So, you know, if he was doing that before, if he was playing the cut shot down before and he's not playing it down now, then the first thing I would look at is the back lift rather than the grip.
Yep. All right. Okay. Well, if you guys are bored on your iPod, subscribe to the My Cricket Coach Show on iTunes and listen to the show from there. Or you could follow us on Twitter. If you guys have any questions or feedback, please email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Thanks for your time, guys. From Australia, this is Kevin Sampat signing off.
And this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.